Be fun and rewarding. But to make that happen, you have to separate the good from the bad, from the ridiculous. I'm trying to help you do that in a none too gentle way. This audiobook is divided into three sections. The first part of the program deals with what you as an individual are up against in your life as an American. That means things like your status in society, money, sex, and the ever-present media. Then we focus on personal relationships, the important ties that bind you to family, friends, and bosses. The final sections concern America itself and what is happening to the country today. I won't spoon over any chicken soup advice here. We're not going to get in the zone or use New Age claptrap or find answers in any Mars-Venus conflict. This is just the straight story as I've lived it and you've lived it. You'll see. Note to Reverend Jesse Jackson, sorry, Jesse, you're wrong. Racism gets all the ink, but the heart of America's somewhat unfair social setup is class, not race. This fact might cut into your power base, but it's true. The question for this age in America is, what class are you? Never thought about it? You should. Each one of us is born into a very specific economic and social class, regardless of color. Most of us remain in that class, for better or worse, until the day we die. Politicians don't usually talk about class. It might open a dangerous door. Advertisers want us to believe we're all one class, the consuming class, equal as long as we keep spending. The rich want us to believe that anyone can make the quantum leap from bowling league to country club by just working a little harder. That's supposed to keep us motivated and quiet. But class really does matter. Would every blue-collar family be happier and more productive if a long-lost relative died and a trust fund flew in the window overnight? No, because class is not just about money. It's about opportunity for your kids or dashed hopes, about education or minds that close down for good, about enduring values or materialism that comes out of greed or self-indulgence or complete disregard for others. It is the bottom line, in a way, for every problem I talk about in this program. Class attitudes can be involved in unfair tax laws, or government indifference about our terrible drug problem, or what kind of entertainment is available at the local movie house. Class plays a role in gun control laws that restrict personal freedom for the little guy and in casual enforcement of drunk driving laws. As someone once said, class in America is like sex in Victorian times. People believe that if no one talks about it, it will just go away. Whatever I've done or will do in this life, I'm working-class Irish-American Bill O'Reilly. No one ever told me or my sister that we were pretty far down the social totem pole while we were growing up in 1960s America. We took for granted that it was normal to buy cars only when they were secondhand, that every family clipped coupons to save money, and that luncheon meats were the special of the day. The municipal pool in our town on Long Island, New York, was pretty seedy. And we took the Greyhound bus to Miami for our annual vacation. But since air travel and private pools simply did not exist in our world, we never thought we were missing anything. My parents, who loved us both and wanted the best for us, believed the best was playing it safe in life. My father, who never made more than $35,000 a year while exhausting himself commuting daily from Levittown to New York City to work as a currency accountant for an oil company, took for granted that college for his son meant one thing above all, employment security. He and my mother graduated from college, but they did not remember the experience as a life-altering event. Dad didn't want me rocking the boat or getting big ideas. He looked ready to throw up when I told him I was going to study abroad during my junior year in college. "Why do you want to do that?" he snorted. "You could start on the football team." He didn't know, as I did by then, that the privileged classes saw the college years as an opportunity for learning a great many things that did not necessarily involve going home on weekends. Of course, my father had never met such people, nor did he care to. He was proud of his Spartan life with its fast foods, yearly three-week vacations, and four Robert Hall suits hanging in a small closet in a three-bedroom, one-bathroom home. All of his friends lived pretty much the same way and were just as proud. Most of my childhood friends stayed in the neighborhood, married each other, and now live fairly comfortable middle-class lives. Some of them are happy, some aren't. But few of them realize how much their lives have been defined for them by a class system that discourages most of us from moving up the social ladder, no matter how hard we work. American politicians, business people, and media moguls have to love the middle and working classes because we exist in such huge numbers. Without us, say goodbye to country music and rap, slasher flicks, and the home shopping network, the Gap and SUVs, Jerry Springer and Oprah, malls and malt liquor, tattoo parlors and trailer parks, Myrtle Beach and Branson, Missouri, professional wrestling and the National Enquirer. Talking point. This country hums along economically because of the toil and the tastes of the working class, and the big profit boys will do almost anything to keep it that way. Factor that into the price of your next Happy Meal. Like most working-class kids, I first learned about the class system and its rigidity when I left home for the wider world. As a freshman at Marist College in Poughkeepsie, New York, I was like most of my class, ethnic instead of O-line WASP, smack dab in the middle of the middle class. Following the path that seemed destined for me, I became a high school teacher after graduation. There's no job more important and few more difficult. But I was ambitious for the larger stage and left after 2 years to go to Boston University for a master's degree in journalism. From the campus of this mostly middle-class school, my friends and I could look across the Charles River at MIT and Harvard, observing that more than a stretch of dirty water separated us. Our degrees would not open as many doors as degrees earned over there. Our fathers did not have friends waiting to interview us for fast-track jobs as soon as we got our sheepskin. Many of my classmates set their sights lower than they should have, in my view, because they believed they were already behind in the race. Years later, in an effort to bring all sorts of people together in a creative mix, Harvard's John Kennedy School of Government accepted me for postgraduate study when I was in the middle of my broadcasting career. Suddenly, Bill O'Reilly was in a world where no new friend was named Vinny, Stevie, or Serge, and there were no girls called Amber, Tiffany, or Jennifer. Many of my classmates had three names, and they expected to hear all three of them. Stephen Tristan Coppin, Robin Braden Crossfield. I studied my Harvard classmates more intently than any political courses at the Kennedy School, and I had a nice enough tuxedo, I thought, but a friend might have several. Oh, it's day class A to say tuxedo or a tux, old boy. It's evening clothes or formal wear. Because the point was not really the material things themselves, it was having the right attitude, which meant acting a certain way and using the terms and accents of the elite. One rule was not to be pretentious. A neighbor in Levittown might save up money and take pride in new drapes, no class. The upper classes refer to curtains, not drapes, rugs, not carpets, and so forth. Meanwhile, a part of the Harvard world was studying me. To my surprise, many of the faculty and students had seen me anchoring Inside Edition, a nationally broadcast infotainment TV show that might delve into such politically significant subjects as Madonna's decision to have a baby. Harvard people watch this kind of program? Well, they found it amusing. The Harvardites weren't consciously acting superior. In fact, they were very nice people for the most part, and many were studying politics so they could help others. But they were generally clueless about the lives, the thoughts, and the dreams of working-class Americans. Such subjects do not come up over the macaroons and out-of-season raspberries at the club. Ridiculous note. Maybe it's not always easy for the upper classes. When George Herbert Walker Bush ran for president in 1988, a Texas politician ridiculed him for being born on third base and thinking he hit a triple. In 2000, a computer whiz named Zach Exley founded a website that made fun of the presidential campaign of George W. Bush. He supported this venture in part by selling bumper stickers as, "Don't blame W, he's a victim of social promotion." Politics is serious, but don't take it too seriously. In the interest of bipartisanship, let me say that the bumper sticker of the year reads, "Vote for Nixon in 2000, he's not as stiff as Gore." I've mentioned my beginnings here to underscore the point of this opening discussion. The way you look, sound, carry yourself, dress, and even smile is very important to your life and career in today's America. The system is cleverly designed so that a lucky few will get rich and grab power, and those people are even a smaller group than the ones who inherit money and power generation after generation. If you aren't interested in competing for the richest prizes yourself, why should you care? Because the goals and attitudes of the establishment affect the lives of everyone in this nation. Bulletin. America is not supposed to have a class system, but it does. Even if the rules aren't as rigid or oppressive as in India or Britain or Spain, class issues influence your life every day, and you ought to think about it. Winston Churchill said that democracy was the worst possible form of government except for all the others. Maybe we can say the same about capitalism. For all its faults, it gives most hardworking people a chance to improve themselves economically, even as the deck is stacked in favor of the privileged few. Ridiculous note, polo and yacht races may be the most upscale of sports activities, but golf still betrays its origins among the leisured classes. According to Sports Illustrated, PGA Tour player Nota Begay went behind bars in February 2000 after his second drunk driving conviction in a five-year period. Begay, who won two PGA events in 1999 and earned $250,000 in the first 2 months of the 21st century, had a light enough sentence to begin with, a total of 7 days in a detention center in New Mexico. But authorities evidently felt that having to sleep there was punishment enough for endangering other people's lives by drinking and driving. He was allowed off campus every day to train at his usual gym, have lunch at his house, practice golf all afternoon, eat dinner at the clubhouse, and then have his chauffeur return him to the detention center. That's 12 hours a day on the loose, out of the slammer, while serving time. Here are the choices most of us face in a system: get bitter or get busy. When you understand the game, you can take charge of how you want to live. You can choose the life that makes the most sense for you only when you find out what your options really are. And if you don't believe class is important in your life, you might want to ask yourself some questions like these. Did my spouse or I turn down a chance for another job because of the fear of not fitting in? Did someone in my family not stand up for himself or a family member after some injustice because he didn't feel he was good enough? Do I miss out on some social or sports activity I like because I'm afraid everyone else involved in it dresses better or has more income? Have I discouraged my children from chasing an ambitious goal because I'm afraid they won't be happy or comfortable in the upper-class situation? Do I refuse to learn something, alpine skiing, computer skills, wine collecting, field hockey, because I think that other people are already way ahead of me and I would be acting above my station? Get the point? Good. Now, on to how the class factor is propped up by the money factor. Note to Hillary Clinton, why keep coming up with more government programs to give our tax money away when you could teach us all how to make a fortune on our own? You invested $5,000 with Robert Red Bone, a commodities trader later under investigation for allegedly manipulating the market, and got back profits of $73,000 a few days later. Tell us your secret, Hill, and we might vote you senator for life. Backup stats. Half of American households have savings of less than $1,200, according to the Census Bureau. Out of a population of 280 million, some 36 million of us are financially poor. No one is giving these people a sure thing in the commodities markets. So where is all the money of this hard-working country with its booming economy and skyrocketing stock market? Here's a clue. Only about 4 million of our fellow citizens, or less than 2% of us, have assets of at least $1 million apiece, and in many cases, much, much more. Only 143,000 Americans report an annual income of more than a million. And that money doesn't just sit in the bank. It steadily grows as the real estate market tightens in the big cities, or stocks race up the charts because of consumer confidence. In other words, the rich get richer because we in the middle class are working harder and spending more than ever. The story of most of us lies in the middle. According to the National Taxpayers Union, the median income for two-earner families in America is $55,000 a year. That means half take in more than that and half less. The class system as related to race plays a role. Single-income white households have a median income of $39,000, while single-income black households have a median income of $25,000. And the earnings gap between rich and poor is widening. Talking point. These figures are no accident. The powers that be want you to have just enough cash to keep on buying material things and necessities, but not enough money to become independent of the system. Am I saying you should devote your life to making big bucks in order to be happy? No. But here's the problem with having too little money. You are at the mercy of other people. Without substantial assets, your life is in the hands of bosses and bankers and public officials. These people can terrorize you and make you do things that are not at all in the best interests of your family and community. This is not good. Worse, in the country designed by very smart men like Thomas Jefferson and James Madison to be for the people, there are two systems of justice. Ridiculous note. New York mob boss John Gotti has been put away for life in federal prison in Illinois for heinous crimes too numerous to mention. But he feasts on fresh mozzarella flown in to please his palate. The so-called Dapper Don earns his name even behind bars. But death rows in many...